Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, Danielle Wilson, a Texan living in London, talks about how she became a labyrinth facilitator and how walking labyrinths offer opportunities for people to experience a walking meditation. The interview begins with Danielle talking about how she first encountered labyrinth walks.
It was a minister at my church, Roslyn Hill Unitarian Chapel, where you came for the walk. And he knew about labyrinths, and he didn't have a canvas, but he created a labyrinth. He held three different workshops one night a week over 3 weeks, and the whole experience was really moving for me. It's an experience that's always stayed with me, that richness of not knowing what I'd fallen into, but just knowing I had to keep following it. A year or two later, he had somehow got himself onto a mailing list of labyrinth enthusiasts, and there was a notification of a labyrinth workshop going on. And I just, when I heard this being announced, I thought, maybe this is something I need to dabble into and see what this is all about, because I'd never done anything with it, but I'd never quite forgotten that whole experience. So I went, and I was put off at first because it was Reverend Lauren Artress, who's the person that trained me. She's an Episcopalian priest, and I've always been very resistant to anything attached to organized religion, much less Christianity, much less Episcopalianism. I mean, she's the most famous author, trainer, teacher, speaker about labyrinths. And that was the first time I'd walked a canvas labyrinth. And again, I had a wonderful experience and just learned more and more. Then came out of that, and she had mentioned that they do these regular pilgrimages to Chartres Cathedral. Probably about 9 months later, I ended up in Chartres. I think it was June 2002. I mean, it's just the most moving experience. So that's how I got started. And then after Chartres, I decided that if I was going to take this seriously, that I wanted to train. And in November 2002, I went back to Texas, which is where I come from. So I did my facilitator training in November 2002.
What does that involve?
It's about a three-day classroom type training. Everyone that goes on facilitator training has already done a weekend or a workshop with Lauren. So it's not about conveying information about labyrinths necessarily, because you can read books to do that. It's about how to hold the space, what I'm responsible for in terms of if someone's looking distressed on the labyrinth, how do I take care of them when they come off? How do I not be interfering? The types of music to play, the pacing, holding the sacred space for others. And I think the training was invaluable. I really did enjoy doing that training.
You offer the opportunity for people to experience walking in a labyrinth. Yes. Can you talk about where that takes place and a little bit about what's involved?
Well, I'm very lucky that my church let me use the premises. It's a beautiful Gothic Victorian cathedral. It's just such a beautiful ambiance, and I think that makes so much difference. The chapel itself just has such a wonderful feel to it. It's always on a Sunday afternoon. It's always from 2 until 4. Always start them exactly the way it was when you came, with a 15 to 20 minute introductory talk. If people don't have a little bit of information, they spend their entire times wondering, where did this come from? Is this a Christian symbol? I wonder if this is a maze. How do I know I'm going to get to the center? And that's not what labyrinth walking is about. It's about getting rid of all that external chatter and just being completely present in the moment and really delving into the experience. And that's why I'm so clear as well when I give my talk that, okay, there's no right or wrong way to walk a labyrinth. I want everyone to have as full an experience as they can. They shouldn't be distracted by outside chatter and disturbances and questions and things. And the whole thing about a labyrinth is it's the path to the interior. It's a path to that still, quiet place within. The pattern, the geometric pattern that's on the ground, is a metaphor for going within. It just keeps the mind focused on, oh, I gotta turn left now. Oh, gotta turn right. Oh, okay. Gotta trust the path. I know the path will take me to the center. I know I'll get back out again. Need to just trust, need to just hand it over. I can't be prescriptive about what kind of experience people are going to have. And so sometimes people aren't ready to find that still, small space inside. And I can't make them. Can't make them have the deep experience I want them to have. I need to just let go. So it's been a journey for me, as well as providing the space and the ambiance and everything. It's been a journey.
Do you think that people can walk labyrinths without it being facilitated? Do you think it's something that can be done without a facilitator?
Yes and no. With a facilitator, you know that the ambiance is going to be maintained exclusively. Without a facilitator, for example, if you're outside on any number of the turf labyrinths that we have in England, invariably you will be the magnet for every street urchin in the neighborhood to come and stand and gawp at you. And to me, that's not a meditative experience. There are outdoor labyrinths that obviously aren't facilitated. Invariably, if they're set up by a labyrinth facilitator, they will have some kind of an information plaque. Just to give a brief context, I'm very skeptical about labyrinths that have no information, that are in very, very open places. They're open to abuse. The people who walk them, they couldn't leave their bags at the entrance. They'd be always worrying, or they've got to carry them with them, and then they're encumbered, and maybe they couldn't even take their shoes off. And that's the great joy in England, when the weather's decent, is taking your shoes off and really grounding to the earth on a turf labyrinth.
Could you explain a little bit about how long labyrinths have been used and for what purposes, or what we guess they may have been used for?
As many purposes as you could probably think of. Labyrinths have been used predominantly for decoration for as long ago as 4,000 years. And I'm not a labyrinth historian, but I did do a little bit of work to find what the earliest piece of evidence was that Jeff Sayward could find. And that dates from 2000 BC, and it's a piece of a pottery vase from Spain. And it has not my pattern, not the Chartres pattern, but a Cretan spiral. But it shows you how long the symbology has been in man's consciousness. And of course, that trips me off into another area that's really interesting, and that is there are five geometric symbols that have been found in art forms all around the world long before communication as we know it was ever established. And that means writing, traveling, speaking, whatever. So how could those five geometric symbols have shown up in art forms independent of each other? Unless, you know, there's other forms of communication, you know. One of those forms is a spiral, and a spiral in its most naive form is a labyrinth. And so that enters me into, you know, one of my favorite areas, which is often when people see the shape of the labyrinth, it resonates with their soul. Not everyone, but it triggers something in people's psyches. And I think that's what it did for me. And of course, I'm more attached to the labyrinth, the Chartres labyrinth pattern, than to any of the others, because I've walked the Chartres labyrinth so many times, and also because it, to me, it's the most complex of any of the labyrinth forms.
Certain cathedrals in Europe have their own labyrinth. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how that came about?
There's very few of them that have original intact labyrinths. Many of them had labyrinths. They got destroyed because the church had a very nefarious, odd relationship with their labyrinths, and they were considered disruptive. Some cathedrals have put them back in. Chartres is the last remaining cathedral in Western Europe that has the only original intact labyrinth, and it dates from around 1200 AD. The reason that these were found in cathedrals was during the time of the Crusades, it was unsafe for Christians to be on the road making their pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and the Pope became very concerned about this and declared cathedrals all over Western Europe to be pilgrimage cathedrals. And so at the pilgrimage cathedral, you had metaphorically arrived at Jerusalem. separate to that, the schools of higher learning were attached to the cathedrals. They didn't have universities then. The esoteric arts were being taught in these schools, the mystery arts, the harmonics, philosophy, the things that people don't pay a lot of attention to now. Geometry. I mean, that's how all these beautiful cathedrals got built anyway. It was the masons and the geometrists, and thereby sacred geometry. And sacred geometry is nothing more than the pleasing proportions of width to height to length to how good a room feels. The schools, if they were teaching geometry, they were almost invariably teaching sacred geometry. We think that's how the sacred geometric proportions got put into the labyrinth itself. It's certainly the one in Chartres. Once the pilgrims had traveled miles across the fields, they'd make it to their pilgrimage cathedral, and then they had one last metaphorical journey. And that's why in France, the labyrinth is often referred to, they use the same word, le labyrinthe, but they also use le chemin de Jérusalem, which means the path to Jerusalem. And this is why many labyrinths have been overlaid with Christian symbology. The Christians would say, I found Jesus Christ in the center of the labyrinth. So that's why I'm so keen in my introductory talk to dispel any kind of myth about this being a Christian symbol. If they were found 4,000 years ago, it can't be a Christian symbol. But of course, the Christians have adopted it.
You actually have a canvas, mm-hmm. which is a reproduction of the Chartres mm-hmm. pattern. Mm-hmm. There's a company in America that mm-hmm. manufactures these mm-hmm. canvases, and you can get any different pattern that you choose. Mm-hmm. Are there a top 10 of labyrinth patterns?
I mean, the reason I went for the one I did go for is the accuracy of the pattern. It's an extremely complex pattern to draw yourself. It's 12 concentric circles, and then you start breaking the path. And that doesn't include the lunations or petals.
And are labyrinths always circles or spirals?
No. They can be squares. The one in Ely Cathedral is a square.
So do you think those are elements which are critical to help people reach a point of being, a point of losing consciousness is not the right word, but, you know, becoming more focused on them, on that inner being?
I'm loath to say that my choice is more important or more valid than anyone else's. It's my choice. My first experience of walking a labyrinth was on the Canvas Labyrinth facilitated by Lauren Artress. But my second experience was the Canvas Labyrinth. Third experience was actually going to Chartres Cathedral. So essentially, I've had nothing but Chartres pattern all along. And again, I've learned when I've been in discussion with other labyrinth enthusiasts that I don't need to argue with them about why my pattern works better. I can't say people are going to have a more full experience. Other people swear blind by the Cretan spiral.
When it comes to the actual walking of the labyrinth, there's no set pace, is there? Mm-hmm. It's just the individual that chooses to go at whatever pace. But you find, I mean, what's the sort of typical length of time that people spend in a 36 or 34 foot diameter
labyrinth? How long's a piece of string?
Mm.
Again, I try not to be preemptive pace, the pace that their body wants to move. And in some people, it might be a little bit quicker without rushing. And in other people, it might vary. And in other people, they can walk really slow and stay really focused. I've had people run, skip, crawl, walk backwards. But, you know, just kind of every form of movement, I've had someone do that on the labyrinth. And I've had one guy take 55 minutes just to get to the center. You'll often find the pace is quickened on the exit, and it's something about, okay, now I know what I need to, you know, that decision that I need to make, that path I need to go on. Okay, I'm going back out in the world, I'm going to do that. And so you'll find that people's energy is enlivened, and they don't walk necessarily quite so consciously and meditatively, still being in the moment and enjoying the experience.
Now, a couple of things, we've corresponded and exchanged emails, and you mentioned that there was a labyrinth in the Olympic Games at Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Can you explain a bit more about that?
I don't really know very much about it. What I understand is it was in the athletes' village, and it was just a chance for them to unwind. And of course, labyrinths are much better known in the States, much more widely available, much better understood, much more allied to Christianity.
And why do you think that is?
I just think that's where Laura Nortress has her power. Also, I think the Americans are much more kind of tuned in to a lot of alternative forms of worship or forms of praying, forms of meditation. They're much more attuned to that.
How about telling me something about what you're doing? You mentioned that you're going to be running a labyrinth walk at the Unitarian.
Yeah, at the Unitarian Annual General Meeting. It's caught on in the Unitarian movement. I'm really providing a chance to just be quiet.
You know, is it something that could be rolled out outside and you could have a labyrinth walk on a campus outside in a bit of public space?
Yes, but you can do them outside using leaves or rocks or twigs or something to lay the pattern out so that it could then remain after you left. And also it's much more connected to the earth. I mean, I love walking turf labyrinths barefoot to be connected to the earth. And of course, as you know, in England, that's not always possible. So it's cold and muddy.
Where and how can people get involved and try out labyrinth walks?
Well, if they get onto my website, www.daniellewilson.com, and there's a page on there under the labyrinth section called, I've published a list there of where you can find outdoor freely available labyrinths. And those are always worthwhile because they have a long history. And the interesting thing is that the labyrinths that are turf labyrinths are invariably called mizmazes. I don't know why, but it furthers the confusion between labyrinths and mazes. Or they can come to my labyrinth walk. And my website has lots of information. However, I have a feeling I'm the only person who holds a regular labyrinth walk with a full-size canvas. At St. James's Piccadilly, they have a much smaller canvas, and it's probably a 7 circuit as opposed to an 11 circuit. That means the number of circles to get to the center, and they lay that out once a month.
Can you give us a sort of simple explanation of the difference between a labyrinth and a maze?
The words are often used interchangeably by people that know better, and I don't understand why. Because it's very, very clear when you study a maze that a maze has more than one path, and it's designed to trick or fool you. Whereas a labyrinth has only one path, and it's designed to guide or lead you. You will always get to the center of the labyrinth. On a maze, you have absolutely no idea. The maze asks you to make choices. Do I turn this way? Do I turn that way? I wonder if I'll make it to the center. Keeps you in left brain activity. Keeps you thinking rationally. The labyrinth, you know you can suspend all that kind of activity because you know the path will take you to the center. And it will take you back out again. So you don't have to think, should I turn this way? Should I turn that way?
Can you tell me why people are using labyrinth walks these days? What purpose or value do they have?
Well, the labyrinth is promoted as a walking meditation or as a body prayer. I use the words interchangeably, but even the word prayer can put some people off. So I like to use the word walking meditation more. And it's great for people that can't sit still and meditate because you're actually moving the body without having to think about where you're going. So you can move into a meditative state without having to use the rational side of the brain. Churches all over the world use labyrinths as prayer stations. They're also used very widely in the earth-based spirit traditions.
You also mentioned that they've been used in hospitals and hospices.
Yes. In the States, more States in Canada, they'll generally have a paved labyrinth in the outdoor grounds somewhere, and it'll be landscaped around it so that it becomes a contained space and it's safe and it's quiet. And it's for the hospital staff and patients and carers to just have a chance to unwind and just let go of whatever their day's been like, let go of their attachment to their diseases, their death, their whatever, and just move into a completely calm, different space. And I think that could be invaluable.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Danielle Wilson. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.